The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. Chapter 21. In Oxford Street. And going downstairs the first time, I found an unexpected difficulty because I could not see my feet. Indeed, I stumbled twice, and there was an unaccustomed clumsiness in gripping the bolt by not looking down. However, I managed to walk on the level passably well. My mood, I say, was one of exultation. I felt as a seeing man might do, with padded feet and noiseless clothes in a city of the blind. I experienced a wild impulse to jest, to startle people, clap in on the back, fling people's hats astray, and gently revel in my extraordinary advantage. But hardly had I emerged upon Great Portland Street, however, my lodging was close to the big draper's shop there, when I heard a clashing concussion and was hit violently behind. And turning, saw a man carrying a basket of soda water siphons, and looking in amazement at his burden, although the blow had really hurt me, I found something so irresistible in his astonishment that I laughed aloud. "The devil's in the basket," I said, and suddenly twisted it out of his hand. He let go incontinently, and I swung the whole weight into the air. But the fool of a cabman standing outside a public house made a sudden rush for this, and his extending fingers took me with excruciating violence under the ear. I let the whole down with a smash on the cabman, and then with shouts and the clatter of feet about me, people coming out of shops, vehicles pulling up, I realized what I had done for myself, and cursing my folly, I backed against a shop window and prepared to dodge out of the confusion. In a moment, I should be wedged into a crowd and inevitably discovered. I pushed by a butcher boy, who luckily did not turn to see the nothingness that shoved him aside, and dodged behind the cabman's four-wheeler. I do not know how they settled this business. I hurried straight across the road, which was happily clear, and hardly heeding which way I went, in the fright of detection the incident had given me, I plunged in the afternoon throng of Oxford Street. I tried to get into the stream of people, but they were too thick for me, and in a moment my heels were being trodden upon. I took to the gutter, the roughness of which I found painful to my feet, and forthwith the shaft of a crawling hansom dug me forcibly under the shoulder blade, reminding me that I was already bruised severely. I staggered out of the way of the cab, avoiding a perambulator by convulsive movement, and found myself behind the hansom. A happy thought saved me, and as this drove slowly along, I followed immediately in its wake, trembling and astonished at my turn of my adventure, and not only trembling but shivering. It was a bright day in January, and I was stark naked, and the thin slime of mud covered the roads was freezing. Foolish as it seems to me now, I had not reckoned that, transparent or not, I was still amenable to the weather and all its consequences. Then suddenly a bright idea came into my head. I ran round and got into the cab, and so shivering, scared, and sniffing with the first intimidations of a cold, and with the bruises in the small of my back growing upon my attention, I drove slowly along Oxford Street past Tottenham Court Road. My mood was different than in which I had sallied forth 10 minutes ago, as it is possible to imagine. This invisibility, indeed, the one thought that possessed me was how to get out of the scrape I was in. We crawled past Muddy's, and there was a tall woman with 5 or 6 yellow-labelled books hailed my cab. I sprang out just in time to escape her, shaving a railway van narrowly in my flight. I made off up the roadway to Bloomsbury Square, intending to strike north past the museum, and so get into the quiet district. I was now crudely chilled, and the strangeness of my situation so unnerved me that I whimpered as I ran. At the northward corner of a square, a little white dog ran out of Pharmaceutical Society's offices and incontinently made for me, nose down. I never realized it before, for the nose is to the mind of a dog what the eye is to the mind of a seeing man. Dogs perceive the scent of a man moving as men perceive his vision. The brute began barking and leaping, showing, as it seemed to me, all too plainly that he was aware of me. I crossed Great Russell Street, glancing over my shoulder as I did so, and went some way along the Montague Street before I realized what I was running towards. Then I became aware of a blare of music, and looking along the street saw a number of people advancing out of Russell Square, red shirts and the banner of the Salvation Army to the fore. Such a crowd, chanting in the roadway and scoffing on the pavement, I could not hope to penetrate, and dreading to go back farther from home again, and deciding on the spur of the moment, I ran up the white steps of the house facing the museum railings, and stood there until the crowd should have passed. Happily the dog stopped the noise of the band too, hesitated, and turning tail running back to Bloomsbury Square again. On came the band, bawling with unconscious irony some hymn about "When shall we see his face?" And it seemed an interminable time to me before the tide of the crowd washed along the pavement by me. Thud, thud, thud came the drum with a vibrating resonance, and for the moment I did not notice two urchins stopping at the railings by me. "Same," says one. "See what?" says the other. "Why, them footmarks. Bare. Like what you make in the mud." I looked down and saw the youngsters had stopped and were gaping at the muddy footmarks I had left behind me up the newly whitened steps. Passing people elbowed and jostled them, but their confounded intelligence was arrested. Thud, 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 when thud, shall we see thud his face, thud, thud. "There's a barefoot man going up them steps, or I don't know nothing," said one. "Had he ever come down again, and his foot was a-bleeding?" The thick crowd had already passed. "Looky there, Ted," quoth the younger of the detectives with a sharpness of surprise in his voice, and pointed straight to my feet. I looked down and saw at once the dim suggestion of their outlines sketched in splashes of mud. For a moment I was paralyzed. "Why, that's rum," said the elder. "Dashed rum. It's like the ghost of a foot, ain't it?" He hesitated and advanced with an outstretched hand. A man pulled up short to see what he was catching, and then a girl. In another moment he would have touched me. Then I saw what to do. I made a step. The boy startled back with an exclamation, and with a rapid movement I swung myself over the portico to the next house. But the smaller boy was sharp-eyed enough to follow the movement, and before I was well down the steps and upon the pavement, he had recovered from his momentary astonishment and was shouting that the feet had gone over the wall. They rushed round and saw my new footmarks flash upon the lower step upon the pavement. "What's up?" asked someone. "Feet. Look, feet running." Everybody in the road, except my three pursuers, was not pouring along after the Salvation Army, and this blow not only impeded me, but them. There was an eddy of surprise and interrogation. At the cost of bowling over one of the young fellow, I got through, and in another moment I was rushing headlong into the circuit of Russell Square, with six or seven astonished people following my footmarks. There was no time for exclamation, or else the whole host would have been after me. Twice I doubled round corners, thrice I crossed the road and came back upon my tracks, and then, as my feet grew hot and dry and the damp impressions began to fade, at last I had a breathing space and rubbed my feet clean with my hands, and so got away altogether. The last I saw of the chase was a little group of a dozen people, perhaps, studying with an infinite perplexity a slowly drying footprint that had resulted from a puddle in Tavistock Square. A footprint as isolated and incomprehensible to them as Crusoe's solitary discovery. This running warmed me to a certain extent, and I went on with the better courage through a maze of less frequented roads that runs hereabouts. My back had now become very stiff and sore, my tonsils were painful from the cabman's fingers, and the skin of my neck had been scratched by his nails. My feet hurt exceedingly, and I was lame from a little cut on one foot. I saw in time a blind man approaching me, and fled limping, for I fear his subtle intuitions. Once or twice accidental collisions occurred, and I left the people amazed, with unaccountable curses ringing in their ears. Then came something silent and quiet against my face, and across the square fell a thin veil of slowly falling flakes of snow. I had caught a cold, and do as I would not avoid an occasional sneeze, and every dog that came in sight, with its pointing nose and curious sniffing, was a terror to me. Then came men and boys running, first one and then others. They shouted as they ran. It was a fire. They ran in the direction of my lodging, and looking back down a street, I saw a mass of black smoke streaming up above the roofs and telephone wires. It was my lodging burning, my clothes, my apparatus, all my resources indeed, except my checkbook, and the three volumes of memoranda that awaited me in Great Portland Street were there. Burning! I had burnt my boats, if ever a man did. The place was blazing. The invisible man paused and thought. Kemp glanced nervously out the window. "Yes," he said. "Go on." End of chapter 21. Read by David Russell. For Lit to Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.